Real businesses like Malibu Apothecary rely on Spectrum to keep them connected.
We're a fragrance company, but we also have a lot of technology that we use. Spectrum is really the backbone of any of the business we do here. Having a reliable, fast internet service that can fit my budget is really great. I traded a 9 to 5 for a 5 to 9. It's a lot of work, but I love it.
Spectrum Business Internet starts at $40 a month when bundled. Learn more at spectrum.com/business. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
97.1 FM Talk Podcast.
This hour of the Mark Reardon Show is sponsored by Gamma Tree Experts. Your trees deserve the best care. Call Gamma Tree Experts.
Mark Reardon.
It's Donald Trump's party, and his GOP opponents can cry if they want to.
Woke has to stop, because along with everything else, it's destroying our country.
Mark Reardon.
We'll fight hard.
Sitting in his golden palace, Mar-a-Lago, muscling other countries like he's Tony Soprano with a social media site.
Woke is bullshit.
This is the Mark Reardon Show.
It's so damn hot. Milk was a bad choice.
Yeah, unfortunately, we got to play that almost every day. Sue, you can vouch for that this afternoon, can't you?
Well, I thought to myself, surely Jana and I, who walk Forest Park once a week, can do it this afternoon. She sent me a text early that said, are we going to do this? It's going to be hot. I said, yeah, we'll just go slower than usual. Well, we did, because I had to stop in the shade like every mile and try to breathe.
Can I tell you, I didn't even tell you what I've been doing for physical activity this week, have I?
No, what you've been doing?
You'd be semi-impressed, because we're going to get to all this stuff here with General Raising Cane, Pete Hegseth kind of going after a Fox reporter. We have Senator Lamping coming up here in a little bit. We'll have Scott Jennings after 5 o'clock. No, but you know, I take my daughter. Hi, Fred, by the way. How are you?
Good.
And Ethan's in here, too. Hey, just quickly with Ethan, the Cardinals are losing right now.
2-0 last I checked.
So it may be a split. You're still trying to win this series. No, so I dropped my daughter off. She has swim lessons at Big Bend Woods, which is a neighborhood pool. It's over by Parkway South. All right, so like 141. Okay. And Big Bend in Hanna is where it's located. So
sure.
There's not a lot of time. She has practice from 9:30 until 10:15. So there's not a lot of time, right? And for a little while last week, I was going to hit golf balls, and that was ill-fated anyway. But, you know, when you're hitting golf balls when it's that hot, you're just not helping yourself at all. And plus, again, I'm not helping myself regardless of the temperature. But there's I've been trying to dedicate myself to a little bit of intense exercise, which has been challenging this summer because of the swim lessons. I cannot wait till my daughter goes back to school. I wish fifth grade started like tomorrow, because Becky and I are juggling just a little bit, and Becky's aunt helps and the neighbor helps. But anyway, right there where the entrance to the pool is, there's a pretty big incline. You know, the road goes up.
Yes.
And I thought to myself 3 days ago, hopefully you'll be impressed here. 3 days ago, I said, you know what? I'm not going to go hit golf balls. And I actually ran to Schnucks real quick, but I came back and it was a day that she was going to practice a little longer. I said, I'm going to run up this hill and I'm going to walk.
What?
Okay, I know, right? Right? I'm going to run up the hill.
Yeah,
and then
Mark told me that on the
phone.
Wait a
minute, you're
completely. I did tell you this, didn't I? Yeah.
Hey, well, I'll call you back. I'm going to run up the hill for a minute.
Wait,
and I just thought he was driving up there. I didn't know he was actually running.
No, I was running, and I'm not a runner, right?
I was going to say, you're not a runner.
No.
You haven't run on the flat.
No.
There's no ramping up. We're just going to run up a hill.
Well, but here's it was like a little bit of interval training. I actually am rather impressed with myself, and I think you will be dazzled as well, Sue. So I thought to myself, let me see if I can. This was 3 days ago. What's today? Thursday. So it would have been Tuesday, Wednesday. Tuesday morning. I'm like, I'm going to stay here. And I'm going to run up this hill, and I'm going to walk back down. And it's not the hill's not even a quarter of a mile, right?
But okay.
But it's a
hill's a hill.
A hill. So I run up. I walk back down. I run up. I walk back down. I mean, I'm getting a pretty good. And it's hot, but there's trees, so I have a little bit of a canvas. So I did it 5 times. Believe it or not.
That is impressive.
That is.
So then yesterday, I did the same thing. I thought, you know what? I did. I thought it was going to be really sore. And I wasn't really sore.
No,
so I thought, I'm going to do it again. I'm going to do that damn thing again 5 times. And it perfectly sort of times out. I mean, I have a few minutes on the back end and the front end, and I call Fred. That's when I told Fred,
right.
I think, I'm running up that hill. And this should remind you of Kate Bush's song, by the way.
Yes.
So then today, so I told my daughter what I was doing, and my daughter's been, you know, they do this thing at the pool called Workout Wednesday, where in theory, yesterday, they were not only supposed to swim, but they were supposed to run. They run like a mile or whatever it is, but they canceled that. It is. It's good, and she actually doesn't mind it, but they canceled it because of the heat. Yeah. So I told her, I'm like, you know what? I didn't cancel my run because of the heat. I ran up that hill five times and walked back down. And it, you know, it gave me pretty good intense workouts. So then she challenges me. Okay, she challenges me. She says, okay, Daddy, I want you to do seven tomorrow, which is today. And I said, I tried to negotiate here just a little bit, right? She's a negotiator. I think she's going to be an attorney. I said, how about if I do six? No, I want you to do seven. So guess what I did today?
Seven?
I did seven times up that damn hill from 9:30 until 10:30.
Yeah,
9:30 until 10:15, essentially. It only takes me about 25 minutes. But again, when you're running up the hill, it's more like if I was on the flat, it would be like, okay, I'm going to run intensively. Am I using the right word even? And then I'm going to back off. Because like if I was trying to just run a mile right now or even 2 miles, maybe I could get to a mile. I don't know. It's not like I'm in the worst shape, but look, running is different. It's different than playing racquetball. It's different than riding a bike. So I just kind of committed myself, and I did it seven damn times. And I kept thinking of the challenge because, you know, that was my motivation. I'm like, if I get back in this car and I pick her up and I tell her that I wimped out and I only did five or I did six. So I kept thinking about the challenge, and hopefully now tomorrow I'm not taking her. We got other plans and I have an oil change. But next week, I know she's going to try to ramp it up to 10 or something like that. I don't know if I could do 10. And I'll tell you this.
I think you could.
I am more sore than I was yesterday. It kind of took 2 days for it to kick in.
That heat is no joke. And part of on Forest Park is 10,000 trees were taken down. And there's not as much shade as there used to be.
That's significant.
And that is really more of a factor than I realized. So kudos to you, shade or not. Seven is impressive.
I would say the big miss on my part, and my daughter pointed this out as well, is that I didn't just have my suit with me and I didn't jump into the pool because even though the pool wasn't technically open for everyone, I could have at least taken a little bit of a dip. Although the pool water, I don't know if you've been to a pool because you swim, Sue. It's like bath water right now. It's so damn hot out there.
It's disgusting.
Even Will Ferrell agrees with that, that it's just not a very comfortable situation at all.
It isn't. And if you go early, then I find, like yesterday, I went early and it was okay. But anything, you can't go after noon or it's just bathwater.
Well, I told you I played, I'm using the word play very generously, but I played golf on Sunday morning and I got to the turn and I said to the guys I was playing with, my friends, I said, guys, I don't know if I have 18 in me. And I was looking at the course outline because, you know, you kind of want to exit into the parking lot if you're going to give up at a certain spot so you don't have to drive the cart all the way back and then someone has to go back on the course, if that makes any sense at all. If you don't golf,
maybe.
No, it
does.
Okay. So, but I had, at the turn, I had a Snickers bar and a Powerade, and that got me through. I mean, it was like an adrenaline shot in my arm. And all of a sudden, I'm like, yeah, I think I can do this. I mean, I was still hot and miserable, but the nutrition does make a difference as well.
That's impressive. It really is.
Well, thank you, Sue. The other thing, and I'll tell you this a little bit more at 4 o'clock, I sent you some pictures last night. Fred, I don't know if I'm going to spend a little bit too much time on my daughter right now, but she made dinner last night.
How was it?
I'll tell you at 4:06, okay, because there's a couple of things that we're going to talk about there. Did I say anything else, Fred, for today? Oh, yeah, something else related to food. So I will give you the details, but she sort of took charge. It was all on her saying, I want to... you know, I want to make dinner tonight. And I wasn't supposed to know what it was. And then when I called on my way home, Becky mentioned what it was, and Alexa was not happy because it was supposed to be like a complete surprise. But I'll give you a little bit more detail on that in just a little bit. And we'll have traffic in just a couple of seconds. But let me get into some of the serious stuff before we have Senator Lamping on. This guy, General Dan Raising Cane, Fred, this guy's impressive, isn't he?
Yeah, he was very good today.
He's the chair of the Joint Chiefs. I do want to share some of his audio. I may have to wait till the end of the hour. But one of the stories today is Pete Hegseth, who was all fired up on, you know, the media coverage of the strike. And one thing that happened that I think I was a little surprised by is he went after Jen Griffin. So, you know, we have more information now than they did with this report a couple of days ago that the strikes on Saturday were pretty damn devastating.
I can say here that the assessment is that we significantly damaged the nuclear program, setting it back by years. I repeat, years. The Iranian foreign minister, the spokesman, our nuclear installations have been badly damaged, that's for sure. I'm sure that's an understatement. John Ratcliffe, the director of the CIA, putting out a statement just last night. CIA can confirm that a body of credible intelligence indicates Iran's nuclear program has been severely damaged by recent targeted strikes.
So he goes on and on with a lot of the information, but of course they're very hacked off, and justifiably so. That CNN and the New York Times, they run out there with the what should have and would have been the asterisk in that where there are questions, and maybe there are questions about how, you know, much damage was actually inflicted and how much and how did it set back Iran in its effort to develop a nuclear weapon. I've said the last 2 days that is not an illegitimate question. What's ridiculous is that that's what they lead with. They lead with the part that should be at the end. Actually, the headline really referred to something that was at the end of the story. So Trump and Rubio, and they didn't take that kindly. And this came out via a leak, and they're trying to figure out who the leakers are.
There's a great deal of irresponsible reporting based on leaks, preliminary information in low confidence. Again, when someone leaks something, they do it with an agenda. Just the little portion that makes it seem like maybe the strike wasn't effective.
So they took some questions, and I mentioned on Saturday when this happened, I was watching both Fox and CNN. I thought Fox's coverage was outstanding, and I like Jen Griffin. Now, I have seen a couple of different reports a couple of months ago that surprised me, the tone that Jen took, but I think she's an outstanding reporter. And Pete Hegseth was asked a question by Jen Griffin this morning. And look, they used to be colleagues. That doesn't mean that they were friendly toward one another. You just never know. I mean, you know, we all work together. We're not hanging out in the after hours. But here's what happened.
Do you have certainty that all the highly enriched uranium was inside the Fordow Mountain, or some of it, because there were satellite photos that showed more than a dozen trucks there 2 days in advance? Are you certain none of that highly enriched uranium was moved?
So I think that's a legitimate question. Now, I don't know specifically what Pete is going to refer to, but he kind of, you know, beats her up quite a bit here.
We're watching every single aspect. But Jennifer, you've been about the worst. The one who misrepresents the most intentionally.
I don't think what
the president says.
I'm
familiar.
Report about the ventilation shafts on Saturday night, and in fact, I was the first to describe the B-2 bombers, the refueling, the entire mission with great accuracy. So I take issue with that.
I appreciate you acknowledging
you
that this
issues.
Was the first the most successful mission based on operational security that this department has done since you've been here, and I appreciate that. So we're looking at all aspects of intelligence and making sure we have a sense of
He seemed to back down just a little bit there at the end, but here's maybe what I would say. I don't know that the Secretary of Defense, or the War Secretary, as Trump referred to him, was dialed into all the media coverage like maybe some of the rest of us. And I will give credit to Jen Griffin because she was talking about how spectacular this mission was. So I'm going to defend her. I thought that was unfair on the part of Hegseth. And I think maybe at the end of that exchange, he might have regretted some of that as well. But look, they're very stressed right now on both sides of the equation. Former Senator John Lamping weighs in on a lot of this coming up next.
Real businesses like Malibu Apothecary rely on Spectrum to keep them connected.
We're a fragrance company, but we also have a lot of technology that we use. Spectrum is really the backbone of any of the business we do here. Having a reliable, fast internet service that can fit my budget is really great. I traded a 9-to-5 for a 5-to-9. It's a lot of work, but I love it.
Spectrum Business Internet starts at $40 a month when bundled. Learn more at spectrum.com/business. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
Okay, I'm gonna call a bit of an audible, and my friend John Lamping, who is on the line, is going to just have to wait a second, only because what's happening is Trump is actually holding a live event on the Big Beautiful Bill. So, Senator Lamping, hang in there for a second. Let me see what I can find out here, because this just started a few minutes ago here.
Well, because there's something for everybody, and I think in many ways much better. We're delighted to be joined by Secretaries Marco Rubio, Scott Bessent, Pete Hegseth, Doug Burgum, Doug Collins, Sean Duffy, Howard Lutnick, Linda McMahon, Brooke Rollins, Scott Turner, Chris Wright. Wow, that's a hell of a group. I think that's the biggest, that's the biggest group of cabinet members. That's the biggest group of cabinet, and we're not finished yet because we have our great Attorney General Pam Bondi here. U.S. trade representative, and he's working around 24 hours. We have one after another. Countries come. Everybody wants to be with us because we have the hottest country in the world. A year ago, we had a disaster on our hand. We had the coldest country, I think, by far. And now we have the hottest. The king of Saudi Arabia, when I was there, we brought back $5.1 trillion between Qatar, Saudi Arabia, and UAE. And all three said, great leaders, they all said to me the same thing. You know, it's amazing. In 4 months at that time, and at that time now it's getting to be close to six. But in 4 months, they said, you have the hottest country anywhere in the world. It's not even close. And they thought we were dead a year before that. They said, I thought you were dead. The country was dead. And it was pretty close to it. But we have the hottest country in the world, so it's great. And Trade Representative Jamison Greer is very busy because, where are you, Jamison? Everybody wants to make a deal and have a part of it, right? I know you and Howard and Scott are working overtime, making deals with other countries. You remember a few months ago, the press was saying, do you really have anybody of any interest? Well, we just signed with China yesterday, right? Just signed with China. We have everybody. We're not going to make deals with everybody. Some we're just going to send them a letter, say, thank you very much. You're going to pay 25, 35, 45%. That's the easy way to do it. And my people don't want to do it that way. They want to do some of it, but they want to make more deals than I would do. But we're having some great deals. We have one coming up, maybe with India, very big one, where we're going to open up India. In the China deal, we're starting to open up China, things that never really could have happened. And the relationship with every country has been very good. And we also have OMB director, who's very busy also, Russ Vogt. Thank you. Thank you, Russ. And also, I want to give a very special thank you. This is a hell of a group we have here. This is amazing, the quality of people. But actually, I like these people and most of those people much better than the people I just named. Okay.
All right. Well, I'm gonna cut out of this for now, mainly because what happens with a lot of these events is there's a lot of he's congratulating, he's naming people right now. When we get to the nuts and bolts, we're gonna roll on that, and maybe we even revisit it live if there's a Q&A, because if there's a Q&A, the Q&A could be very, very interesting. In the meantime, I want to thank former State Senator John Lamping, a dear friend, a regular on the roundtable, for hanging in there with me for just couple of minutes. We're going to cut you a little short, John. How are you this afternoon?
Mark, I'm doing great. Happy to be on with you.
So what would you say? Let's kind of focus on Iran here, and I'll see if I have to go back to President Trump. I have Michael Goodwin from New York coming up to talk about the communist that won the New York City mayor's race, which is just stunning when you look into what that guy's all about. But on the Hegseth stuff and the anger from the administration on the media coverage of this, what would you say at this point? I did think that, I don't know if you heard me talking about this, I think Pete beat up on Jen Griffin maybe a little bit too much, but they're obviously frustrated with the way that the narrative came out, and there seems to be more intelligence that, yeah, this was a pretty devastating hit on Iran.
Yeah, I think they have every right to be upset with the media. It's not hard to find reasons to be upset with the media. And both ends of the spectrum of the media, the mainstream media, they were just hoping that it failed. They were hoping that there was no uranium there. They were rooting for something to go wrong. And that includes Fox News. Well, Fox News, in my mind, they're looking for ways to convince him that he needs to continue to go back. And then when you look at the alternative media, they were upset with the president at first, in that they have no interest in these forever wars. And it appears to me is the frustration that the president felt was people not understanding exactly his opinion or his position. And his position seems to me to be that, hey, we hit these guys. It was a successful hit. We're done with them. Much like when we bombed Soleimani and dropped the mother of all bombs on Syria in my first term, we took action. We're done. We're moving on. And I'm upset with Bibi. I'm upset with the Iranians for continuing to fight. I mean, look, he was supposed to negotiate peace in Ukraine in 24 hours, and he's decided he's given a good shot, and he's moved on. He's not involved in that war. I don't think he'll be involved in this war. I think he's already branded it the 12-day war. It's done as far as he's concerned.
Well, I agree with you there, but you do have it. I'm not very comfortable with the whole MAGA label. I hate it, but let's face it. We've talked about there are people who supported Trump, and I would put myself in this category, who in the last two elections, John, you know this, I didn't vote for him in 2016, but I thought we had no choice to save the country, especially this last time around, but certainly in 2020. But there are people on the MAGA side of the equation, just using that term, like Marjorie Taylor Greene and others, that have sent a message that this perhaps was a bait and switch on the part of President Trump. I don't look at it that way because they were targeted strikes. And it looks, to your point, you know, that this is over in a relatively short period of time. Now, having said that, are some of the complaints legitimate from that side?
No, I think the complaints were legitimate to the extent that it wasn't clear what the president's intentions were in the first 24 hours, 48 hours, the fog of war, if you will. But it's been a week almost, or it's been since last Saturday. The guy's been to NATO. He's cutting trade deals. He's got this thing today. I'm sure today is all about, you know, the fact the stock market's back up to an all-time high. The economy's doing great. He's moved on. I think the concern was in that first little window, because you had the Lindsey Grahams of the world were beside themselves and thinking, here we go, Mark Levin, here we go. We're going to go and regime change. And that's not what it is. And I think that the MAGA influencers at the very beginning wanted to weigh in and say, look, we didn't sign up for regime change. We didn't sign up for never-ending wars. And I think the president, in the end of the day, has delivered what they were looking for.
What would you say, you know, one thing, and I'm sure that there have been some media that has, you know, exposed this or at least tried to take a guess. The one thing that I would say, and I don't necessarily disagree with Marjorie Taylor Greene, is, look, we spent a lot of money doing this, and the defense budget is really big. Is it also legitimate to say, look, we just went through this period of DOGE. She's on the DOGE committee. We're trying to strip back the spending. This country is in big trouble, and here we go with this military operation that maybe, in her mind, wasn't necessary, that cost, you know, I don't even know how high the estimates might be, but hundreds of billions of dollars, right, John?
Yeah, well, look, there's nobody in Washington that has the stomach and the political will to reduce spending at all. I mean, what we learned in DOGE was, all the waste, fraud, and abuse. I know we're going to have a few of these, what do they call them, revision bills. Are going to pull back, you know, $1 billion here or $10 billion there. The president has a very the president's plan is to grow the economy faster such that the taxes you collect will be greater than the rate of growth of the government. That's a theory, and that'll take years to be proven correct or incorrect. But even having said that, look at the whole negotiation for this great big bill. There's no one but for a handful of people that really want to they want to even keep spending flat. There's you've got Republicans in the Senate who want the Green New Deal tax credits. You've got Republicans in the House that want to expand the state and local tax deduction. And no one wants to touch Medicaid, no one wants to touch Medicare, retirement, Social Security. There's no will. We are in a $2 trillion deficit cycle, and there's no way that's going to change. And yes, big military engagements like this cost hundreds of billions. The last, weapons of mass destruction engagement by last count cost us about $9 trillion. So I guess we're doing better having not committed to a long-term boots in the ground. We'll see, but spending, that's still the wild card in this whole thing. What can go wrong with any administration or even this administration is if we ramp back up inflation and, you know, we have issues with the world's perception of the U.S. dollar. The dollar, people don't realize this, it's lost 10% against world currencies into this first half of the year. So the stock market's back up to all-time highs, but the dollar has lost tremendous purchasing power. Gold's up about 30-35% this year. That reflects the lack of confidence in our dollar. And you know, we've been the global reserve currency, and there's a lot of people that are betting that that's going to change relatively soon.
That affects working people, right? I had an interesting conversation a couple of nights ago with a sponsor who's coming on about crypto and Bitcoin and, you know, the future of that, which Trump seemingly, and there was a bill passed that sort of addresses that a little bit more, seemingly understands that maybe heading in that direction is a smart thing. Look, John, we have to cut you a little short, and I apologize just because
of course.
But it's great to hear from you, and I appreciate it.
Great. Talk to you soon. You can cut me off for Trump anytime, Mark.
All right. I appreciate it. Yes, sometimes there's audibles. They don't happen seemingly as enough as they used to, but he is doing something right now on the big, beautiful bill. We have Michael Goodwin coming up from New York City, and we may or may not get to that because I'll tell you what, if Trump gets to questions, I'm going to want to hear the answers to that. So stay tuned.
Hold on.
Spectrum Business keeps real businesses, like Rise Bakery, connected.
As a business owner, my Spectrum services help simplify my day. Everything we do is easier knowing that we've got a reliable connection. And it helps our business just run really smoothly. Even though our techniques are very ancient, we rely just as heavily on technology. Spectrum allows my business to go from surviving to thriving.
Keep your business running smoothly with Spectrum Internet, starting at $40 a month. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
I admitted this yesterday, not paying super close attention to New York City and the mayor's race, but then you find out about the radical who won the race and his positions.
You're a proud Democratic Socialist. Do you think that is a platform that would work for other candidates running in other parts of the country?
Absolutely. I think ultimately this is a campaign about inequality. Part of how we got to this point was through the endorsements of Congresswoman Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez and Senator Bernie Sanders, who've been leading this fight against oligarchy across the country.
Yeah, so he thinks, and that was Jen Psaki asking the question on MSNBC, he thinks that this is the future of the Democrat Party. And, you know, you can't rule out Eric Adams is running as an independent. Cuomo had threatened, I think, to run as an independent after he got his butt kicked there. But what's going to happen here? Michael Goodwin from The New York Post is with us this afternoon. Hi, Michael. Welcome back. How you doing?
Thank you, Mark. Thank you very much.
I would say, what the hell is going on in New York City? Because this guy seemingly has a legit chance at winning this general election. Or do you think now that the microscope will be on him a little bit more? I mean, there's certainly no doubt that Eric Adams has flaws, but can he beat him? I don't think Curtis Sliwa, a Republican, is not going to win in New York City. Can we agree on that?
Oh, yes. Okay. I think that in the last, just for point of reference for your listeners, Curtis Sliwa in the last election was the Republican nominee, and he got 30%. Last year, President Trump and presidential campaign in New York City, the five boroughs, he got 30%. And in 2022, the gubernatorial candidate, Lee Zeldin, now head of the EPA, he ran as a Republican, and he got 30% in the five boroughs. So that seems to be the limit. And I think that the idea that Curtis could win is highly unlikely. So you mentioned Eric Adams, the incumbent, who saw no way forward in the Democratic Party and is running as an independent. Is, I think, in a way, it's freed him to be who he is. He's not beholden to the party anymore. And so it does make for an interesting race. I think Adams will be able to raise the money. I think there's a general feeling among non-Mamdani supporters that Cuomo should not run again in the general election. He was defeated, as you say, soundly in the primary, mm-hmm. and it was more than just a defeat by the numbers. I mean, he looked like a defeated human being. He just had no zest to his campaign. It was perfunctory. He didn't attend most of the candidate forums. There was just a kind of a rose garden strategy that clearly didn't work. And Mamdani is a good campaigner. He's lively. He's fun. He's young. He's exuberant. He's got a great presence on social media. And there are a lot of people who are buying into this nonsense. I mean, on that clip that you played, he said it was about equality. He hasn't run on a campaign of equality. He's run on a campaign of affordability. And they're very different things. But in general, what he said on election night was stunning, that we are going to make this city affordable for every single person. Now, just think literally what that means. It's impossible. It can't be done. And yet that's the snake oil he's been selling, and it looks like it's a winning ticket, at least for the Democrats.
Yeah, so he has openly called for defunding of the police. He wants to end incarceration. He wants to put homeless beds in subway stations. Here's Eric Adams on some of these things.
He's a snake oil salesman.
Mm-hmm.
He will say and do anything to get elected. Think about this for a moment. He wants to raise 1%. He wants to raise tax on 1% of New Yorkers' high-income earners. As the mayor, you don't have the authority to do that. You know who has the authority to do that? An assemblyman, which he is. He wants to do free buses. He could have done it at Assemblyman. He doesn't understand the power of government.
He's also the Free Palestine, you know, candidate. He wants to globalize the Intifada. Now, this is a city. Your city is a city that used to be 31% Jewish. That was back in 1950. It's now 12% Jewish. But some of these things, look, Michael, we have our progressives here. We just booted one of them out of office with our new mayor, although we got another progressive, not as radical. So we do have radicals here in Missouri as well. They're not in the majority, certainly in my state, more so in Illinois. But this guy is out there on, you know, radicalism and progressivism, whatever word you want to use, on steroids, and it's quite frightening, I think.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, the idea, look, New York City is sort of in the doldrums already. And one of the reasons is the quality of life, the cost of living here, and the quality has declined for billionaires as well as ordinary people. So you can drive people away when you basically tell them we're going to tax you more for the privilege of living here and being subject to assault and subject to these anti-Semitic riots, subject to a mayor who's going to wants to defund the police. I mean, on and on and on, you get these kinds of things, and there is a breaking point. Now, it's not a single point. New York already leads the nation in out-migration. So even Governor Hochul, who's no moderate herself, when Mondani's tax plan was presented to her, she said, no, we're already losing too many people to other states. Right. So that's the Democratic governor. Now, the reality is she's running for re-election next year, so she doesn't want to embrace tax hikes. I don't know whether if you notice, Mark, that a number of top Democrats have been very cautious about embracing.
Oh, I bet they have. Yeah, but here, as a follow-up to that, let me play. This is Chris Cillizzo, who used to be at the Washington Post and CNN, and I want you to react to this, because one of the things I used to say here in St. Louis is, and I said it half-jokingly, although I think it kind of played itself out, is that Cori Bush was the gift that kept on giving, right? And I'm like, I'll go up, put yard signs up for Cori Bush, because she's so embarrassing. Not she wasn't good for the St. Louis region, but she helped, I think, on a national level, make people see what some of these radicals are all about. So here's Cillizzo.
If I'm Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, and who, as I mentioned, endorsed Mamdani, and I see this result, I am thinking this is terrific for me. It shows that there's energy in the liberal activist base of the party. It shows that the establishment is crumbling, right? All these politicians who are not AOC, other than Bernie Sanders, are in some way, shape, or form part of the establishment, right? Josh Shapiro or Gretchen Whitmer or Gavin Newsom, all these people have spent years in elected office. If I'm looking at this, I am thinking this bodes very well for me. It suggests that mad as hell Democratic voters are not going to just default back to a Joe Biden-like figure in 2028.
I understand the point there, but for the Democrats on a national level, when they've been lectured by some people who I guess are establishment, like James Carville, and you know, even Rahm Emanuel, I think, is the most interesting figure right now, because I think he's definitely going to run for president. He's trying to bring that conversation, the common sense conversation, back to the center, because I think he sees the writing on the wall. But if the message of this race is, and if this guy wins in the fall and AOC is emboldened by this, what does that mean for national Democrats everywhere?
Well, look, I think there's a real split in the party. It's been a long time coming. Defeat in 24, I think, ramped it up. And so you have two reactions, or many reactions within the party. But one of them is to try to tack toward the middle. You have a John Fetterman, for example, a Pennsylvania senator. And then you have an AOC and Bernie saying, no, go left. The problem is you didn't go
far enough left. Yeah.
Right. So I think that breach has not been healed. And Mamdani strikes a point for the AOC Bernie side of things. But by the same token, you can see a lot of others shying away. For example, the governor, who hasn't endorsed him yet. He's effectively the nominee, but she hasn't endorsed him. Hakeem Jeffries hasn't endorsed him. Chuck Schumer hasn't endorsed him. So you're seeing Democrats, wait a minute here, let's wait and see how crazy is this guy? How far is he going to go? And so I think there is a new element to this split within the Democrats named Mamdani.
Yeah, that's interesting. So do you think, though, would a gut check on your part, Michael Goodwin, be that if they decide not to endorse the names that you just threw out there, and by the way, you know, Kathy Hochul has even doubled down the last couple of days saying, no, some of this is crazy with the tax plan, but will they not then endorse? They wouldn't endorse Eric Adams. They'll just stay out, perhaps?
Well, that's the point, right? I mean, what will they do? Now, my feeling is, assuming Mamdani becomes the official nominee, which he's not yet, there's this ranked choice voting process will finish next Tuesday, and then he will presumably be the official nominee.
Right.
Then I think the heat will be on them to make a decision to say something about him. I mean, it's hard to imagine the leaders of the party, national leaders, state leaders, will not endorse him. But the fact that they've hesitated to, sparking this conversation just like the one we're having.
Well, it's fun to watch from afar, but it is frightening, you know, along the same lines as well. But Michael Goodwin, it's always great to have you on. I hope your summer is going well, and good luck with all this in New York City.
My pleasure.
All right,
Thank you, Mark.
Hey, Trump is still speaking on the big, beautiful bill. I do want to go to him if there are Q&A opportunities. We'll keep track on that and let you know. Sue Thomas standing by. We'll have a Thursday edition of Sue's News. Fred, you've been monitoring the president, and we do have one clip I'm going to play here in a second, but he's not doing a Q&A right now. We don't even know if he will take questions, right?
Yeah, I don't think I saw reporters around there, but what he's doing is he's introducing people that are going to be impacted by the benefits of the big, beautiful bill should it pass through Congress.
All right, so let me highlight this right now. This was the cut. I haven't heard this yet, so I'm going in blind, but this was something that he highlighted from Missouri here, right? Here we go.
D. Silva, a truck driver from Springfield, Missouri, where, by the way, our beautiful planes landed, our B-2s, they landed after 36 hours of flying. Great going, Pete. And they hit the target. And they hit the target, and the target has now been proven to be obliterated, just as we said. We had little fake news from CNN. Thank you very much, CNN.
There we go.
With 3 million miles of driving under her belt, who mentors other women in her industry. And I just want to say Luke and Dee spend countless hours working overtime to help make this country run. And this bill, the typical overtime worker like them will take home nearly $1,500 extra every single year. So you're talking about at least $1,500, and there will be no harassment because you are being harassed by the Democrats.
We have Congressman Bob Onder coming up in the next hour. He's on the House side, of course. They're going to take up this bill again in theory next week, but it has to pass the Senate. We even had, I didn't play this audio, but we had a clip from Senator John Kennedy, who's always one of our favorites from Louisiana, saying that, you know, he still had some issues with parts of the bill. We know that Senator Hawley has thrown the red flag on some of the Medicaid cuts. Here's where it gets difficult. Fred, you might agree with this, because you have what happened over the weekend in Iran, and then the aftermath of that is the leak, and you know that's the focus of all the media.
Yeah.
I couldn't even begin to tell you where they are on the big, beautiful bill, because that's not getting any attention. We did have Eric Schmidt on about 10 days ago, but whatever is happening, the wrangling and the particulars of the bill, really nothing's coming out on that right now that I'm aware of.
Any momentum has been stalled just about.
But there still is an expectation, I think, on
July
the part
4th.
Of the public, that they're going to get this to his desk. The House is going to pass it. But I think it's going to be interesting to hear Congressman Onder's perspective. He's coming up after Sue's News at the bottom of the hour. Let me mention tomorrow as well, because Friday will be here. Next week we have a best of, because we'll be off for the holiday. But the roundtable tomorrow includes Jane Duker, Steve Butts, and James Knowles, the former mayor of Ferguson. Oh, Tom Homan's up there right now. Should we listen to Tom Homan? Let's give a little listen here to Tom Homan. Trump just handed the podium off to him.
The more resources we get, if we get this bill passed, we got more agents on the road. We buy more beds. We get more transportation flights. More agents mean more bad guys arrested, taken off the streets of this country every single day. Every day we arrest a public safety threat or national security threat, this makes this country much safer. Who the hell would be against that? And I get irritated, I get pissed off, because I'm sick of meeting angel moms and dads. You want to talk about family separation? They bury their children. So I've done this since 1984. I've worked for six different presidents. No one has had the success of the Trump administration. We got the most secure border in the history of this nation today.
It's Tom Holman up there talking right next to President Trump at this event at the White House. And he's always fired up. There's no doubt about that. We love him.
But we need more border wall. Border walls save lives. Women and children can't get over that wall, which means they go to a place where there's not a wall. And what's waiting on them? The men and women of the Border Patrol who take care of this humanitarian needs and save their lives. We already got fentanyl seizures down half. Fentanyl seizures should be 100%. We should have zero fentanyl coming to this country. We need money to help secure that border at a higher level. Stop the fentanyl from coming in. Stop the sex trafficking of women and children. Stop the known inspected terrorists coming across that border. Right now, I was looking at the stats today. ICE is arresting a record number of known suspected terrorists in this country, along with the FBI. With more money, we can arrest more of these people, make this country safer. This is a nonpartisan issue. Let's make this country safe again. So to the Democrats and the Republicans and the Independents, I don't care who you're from, pass the bill so we make this country safe, so we can stop the violence against ICE officers. Let's make this country safe again. And without that bill, it's going to be a hard road. We got a lot of people to look for, a lot of people to arrest, a lot of national security threats we know are in this country. We need to find them. We need more money to do that. We need more agents to do that. For God's sake, let's pass this bill and get this done.
You know, I'll cut out of this again here, but what's interesting about this, there's parallels with the media coverage on what, you know, Tom Homan is referring to here and what the president, Pete Hegseth and Marco Rubio, were upset with the legacy media on some of the coverage of the attack on Iran. So when I went to the LA Times, interestingly enough, there were two stories that caught my attention. One was out that vice mayor in South LA County, this community called Cudahy, who was basically, you know, cheering for the gangbangers to get involved and to, you know, really, I don't know, attack ICE agents, right? Do something. Her question was, hey, what's up, gangbangers? You know, why aren't you doing something? All the regular people are out there. They're protesting. They're holding signs. Why don't you guys get involved? Which is stunning. And she's now under federal investigation. But there's never any effort, like in the LA Times or the New York Times or the Washington Post, to focus on some of the things that Tom Homan just really highlighted, the fentanyl, the sex trafficking, all the things. And it's always in the narrative that these are people who are just here trying to make a better life for themselves. Some of those people are. Are some people being picked up in the dragnet in that situation? Yes. But the big story in the LA Times today is LA immigration raids forced the undocumented to trade their freedom for safety. That shouldn't be the case at all. And I don't think it is the case. There are people living in fear, not because they're going to be swept up by ICE agents, but because the LA Times and CNN and the legacy media are only focusing on that. They're not focusing on the bad hombres that are being removed from the country. So I appreciate Tom Homan's energy. And again, President Trump is holding this event for the Big Beautiful Bill. I'd love to know what Congressman Onder is going to say about some of this at the bottom of the hour. We'll have him there. But first, we got Sue's News on a Thursday afternoon. Scott Jennings at 5:04. It's all coming up.
Get more at 971talk.com.
Real businesses like Malibu Apothecary rely on Spectrum to keep them connected.
We're a fragrance company, but we also have a lot of technology that we use. Spectrum is really the backbone of any of the business we do here. Having a reliable, fast internet service that can fit my budget is really great. I traded a 9-to-5 for a 5-to-9. It's a lot of work, but I love it.
Spectrum Business Internet starts at $40 a month when bundled. Learn more at spectrum.com/business. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.